Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zeemer, and it is my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Danny Beal, who is serving as our worship associate. We are glad to be together this morning and glad to welcome you to this religious community, a community that seeks to celebrate and to serve. I would like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time today. We're always delighted to have guests at our services and hope that you will stay afterwards for our social hour, which is held downstairs in Fessenden Hall. There you can pour yourself a cup of coffee and get to know old friends and new in the congregation. If you find that you would like more information about the life and work of this community, I encourage you to complete the guest cards, which you can find in the racks in the pews before you. You can place your completed card in the offering basket when it comes to you later in the service, or hand it to a representative of our membership committee who would be glad to greet you at the visitor's table, which is just around the corner outside the sanctuary doors after the service. In addition to asking you to silence your cell phones, I would like to direct your attention to the thread from the web. That is the insert in your order of service. There you will find several announcements as well as a calendar of events for the week ahead in the church. There are a few items that I would particularly like to call to your attention. This Wednesday evening, we will be having one of our twice monthly Vesper services. Marianne Yeagler will be leading the service. Special music will be offered by the Geezers. The title of the service is Humor for Hard Times. If you come to Vespers, please consider staying afterwards for our congregational information meeting, which will also be held on Wednesday evening here in the sanctuary. I forgot to mention that today, after the service, there will be a pancake breakfast in addition to our coffee hour, so perhaps you'll be smelling that as you sit here and find yourselves inspired to stay and eat. And if not, then next Sunday there is an all-church potluck that you're welcome to attend as well. Next week, you're again invited to join us for worship at 9:30 and 11:15. I will be leading the service accompanied by Worship Associate Marianne Yeagler. The title of the sermon is The Terrible Blessing of the Journey in Celebration of Passover. At the end of today's service, Danny and I would be glad to greet you at the rear of the sanctuary. And once again, I bid you welcome.
From the Tao Te Ching, do you have the patience to wait till your mud settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself?
Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those we know who need our very real love and support. This morning we celebrate with Sandy Eaglin. Her grandson, Henry William Rubel, was born February 2nd to his proud parents, April Eaglin and Eric Rubel. Sandy just returned from spending time with the happy family. And we celebrate with Lori McGee, Joe Fatchett, and Leanne Evanoff, who are delighted that their precious Eva Grace has come home from the hospital. This weekend, the sounds of healing community reverberated in this space as benefit concerts were held for Brian Klemp and Tom Morrow, who are fighting cancer. We continue to hold them in our hearts, along with Brett Worsburn, who is also battling cancer and facing a new challenge. He is having trouble with his remaining kidney. And your prayers and thoughts and cards are welcome. And we, this morning, remember the life of Maida Marshall, who died this week. Maida was a member of this congregation for many years, and her children are planning a memorial service to be held in the church sometime in May. Spirit of life and of love, Spirit of mystery and wonder, name unnamed, you are as near to us as our own breath, and expansive as the most distant reaches of space. Let us be awake to you, remembering in our joys and sorrows alike that we have been given this gift of life, and remembering also that as long as we live, there is love. May it be so, and amen.
Many people grow up with a picture in their heads of how their eventual family will look. As a child, like many young women, I dreamt of a Prince Charming and little blonde babies who had my eyes and his nose. It was a bit of a shock when I realized as a teenager that I was not much interested in the boys around me, but the girl in the front row of biology class had the prettiest smile I had ever seen. Throughout my dating years, I tried several times to have relationships with men, but my heart would have none of it. As I came out as a lesbian, I realized I was choosing a life that was very different than the one I had dreamt of as a child. It was, however, the only life that would fulfill my soul, and so there was no choice involved, just an allowing of what is. The family portrait in my head changed a bit and no longer included a Prince Charming, but perhaps a Princess Charming. My intended family still included children, despite the fact that none of the other gay couples I know were raising families. It was just not really common in the generation of gay people before me. Deciding to live openly gay often meant not only living outside of mainstream society, but also meant giving up on the idea of having children. But times were changing. Ellen came out, Melissa Etheridge started having children, and I dreamt of when my partner would cut the umbilical cord and I would have my first baby placed on my chest. I always knew I would be pregnant someday. As a child, I was drawn to pregnant women and found the expectation and excitement surrounding them intoxicating. I remember putting basketballs beneath my shirt and looking in the mirror, longing for the day I would be able to announce to my family and friends that I was going to have a baby. I loved the idea of having life inside you and still consider this an everyday miracle. I was 22 when my partner Bobby and I began our relationship, and I became a stepmother to an exuberant 4-year-old Jesse. He is Bobby's son, born of her previous relationship. Jesse had known me for most of his 4 years, so as Bobby and I became more serious, I slipped into his daily life without much fanfare, moving into our home when he was 5. My journey as a step-parent has been at turns amazing, wonderful, and terrifying. Jesse had 2 mothers already, as it was Bobby's former partner, a woman, who gave birth to him, so it was difficult to figure out where a 3rd female parent could fit in. In those early years, I struggled to find my place in Jesse's world, as he adored his 2 mothers so much and did not have much need of me. However, I loved him and Bobby fiercely, and I was determined to be a part of the family. As with most things, the passage of time smoothed the rough edges, and we found our way. As the years have passed, I've become more and more of a parent to Jesse in our family structure, as I'm sure it happens with most step families. When Bobby and I decided to share our lives, we did so with the expectation that we would have more children, giving Jesse siblings. I still longed to be pregnant and have a baby, and Bobby was supportive of this wish. We decided to try to get pregnant in 2003 when Jesse was 6. We did not want to wait much longer because we wanted him to have a sibling near his own age. My family portrait had changed again and now included Bobby and Jesse along with the children that I would birth. As a gay couple, we were by definition infertile. Armed with an open-minded fertility specialist and an anonymous donor, we began our journey. We used minimal medical intervention and were thrilled when I became pregnant after the first try. Being pregnant was pretty wonderful, truthfully. I felt like I had a secret growing inside me, and like many pregnant women, I could not wait to start showing. We saw our baby's heartbeat at the first checkup and began preparing our lives for the huge change that was coming. Sadly, that pregnancy ended at 12 weeks when I miscarried. My heart broke, and all of the portraits I had imagined of my new family were shattering. Miscarriage was a horrible experience. The medical intervention seemed cruel. I was swimming in grief and hormones, and then life had to go on, as it always does. I discovered that miscarriage is very common. Between 15 and 20% of all pregnancies end this way, and was shocked by how many women came to me to tell their stories. As personal as this experience is for me, I share this story with you intentionally. I need to speak it aloud so other women know that they are not alone. I also share it with the rest of you, because even if this is not your story, the grief involved with loss is universal, as is the healing. I found comfort in the women's shared experiences of pregnancy loss, especially those of women who were able to carry children to term after having earlier losses. And so we tried again, and tried, and tried. The year following was very hard for me. I struggled with depression while riding the familiar infertility roller coaster. It goes like this. Take meds, get super fertile and hormonal, visit the doctor, wait 2 hopeful weeks, and cry when hope was dashed again. With each successive cycle, add new, more invasive medical treatments, more longing, more hope, more heartache. I became the moon, single-mindedly circling the earth, aware only of the waxing and waning of my body rotating toward another empty end. This journey took us through several years. In between cycles of trying, along with different procedures that promised a possibility of fixing my unexplained infertility, we attempted to live our lives normally. We helped Jesse to grow, saddened that he did not get the childhood playmate we had hoped to give him. Eventually exhausted, we stopped trying for pregnancy. We used our community for support, including Melissa and others here today. I am sure that all people deal with infertility in their own way, such as life. I struggled with a host of emotions during these years. Sadness, jealousy, bitterness, disappointment, hope, despair, and ultimately acceptance. I find the emotion of jealousy to be especially distasteful and had a lot of guilt about how I felt towards my family and friends who were easily getting pregnant around me. Over time, I have learned to let go of this jealousy, and that has been a gift to me. We decided intentionally to take some time after we stopped fertility treatments in order to mourn our losses and cradle this disappointment. This year was healing and wonderful for Bobby and me. I mourned pregnancy, the full feeling of life stirring within. I mourned childbirth, an experience that simultaneously terrified and called to me. I mourned the child I did not get to meet. I mourned all of the things pregnancy brings, the excitement of friends and family, the ability to plan, and the understanding that this child inside would carry genetic pieces of me into eternity. Even within this time of mourning, I could feel a child hurtling through the universe on their way into my arms. Bearing a baby is only one way to have a family. Adoption was always a part of our thoughts on having more children. In fact, I had hoped to adopt as well as have a biological child. When we realized pregnancy was not to be, we both knew adoption was our next step. We began this process last year and are now officially waiting for our child. We could have a baby placed today or it may be years from now. I like to think of myself as pregnant now, I just don't have a definite due date. I'm a bit intimidated by the possible disappointments the adoption process can bring, as I am sure you have heard the same horror stories well-meaning friends will tell. But my quest to expand our family is stronger than my fear of disappointment. I believe that there are gifts in all experiences, whether one believes they are fated or chance encounters. I have grown up. I'm a better parent, more patient with myself and those I love. Jesse has been allowed more time as the center of our collective universe, and this has given him a chance to grow into being a big brother. I imagine that someday I will happily say that all of the pain of this journey brought my child to me, the child that we are meant to have, the sibling that Jesse is meant to love, and that I would have it no other way, and I will mean it. When I look at Jesse, a child who does not share Bobby or my genes, I see Bobby's smile in his. I hear my laugh in his laugh. I see all of his family in his view of the world. Biology exists and is important, but parenting rises above biology. My new family portrait shows Jesse, the now teenage older brother, holding the hand of a toddler, helping this child along in the world. It includes Bobby and me laughing and watching our family grow. It also includes Jesse's other mother and family who share Jesse with us, and our new child's birth family who will lovingly place their child into our care. My family portrait has grown, and it is beautiful.
The day was cold and rainy. It wasn't good weather for a hike, and I wasn't up for the playland at McDonald's. So I suggested swimming as our day off adventure. My nieces thought it sounded like a great idea and ran upstairs to get their bathing suits. They chattered happily as we drove to the indoor swimming pool and cooperated beautifully with all the steps from car to locker room to pool. They had a blast in the water and would have liked nothing better than to stay all day long. But there was lunch to eat and a nap to take and chores to do back home. So after a time, I gave them a 10-minute warning. 10 minutes till it's time to get out of the pool. I issued the warning again at 5 minutes. And then when the time came, I suggested that they take one last jump before we got out of the pool. That is when the youngest began to bargain. 5 more jumps, okay? No, Anna, we need to go home, and I already gave you your warnings, remember? Okay, 3 more jumps. Okay, 3, I said, but then that's it, and I'm counting. After the 3 more jumps had been jumped, she entered into a second round of negotiations. I stood my ground this time, trying the "what would you like for lunch" diversionary tactic. It didn't work. She didn't want to go, and she wasn't going to be able to do it gracefully. By the time we got back to the locker room, I realized that she was barely keeping it together. The breaking point came when I told her that she couldn't keep clicking the hairdryer on and off, on and off. The meltdown arrived, and I realized that I was not going to get the sobbing 3-year-old out to the car unless I carried her, and that she was going to resist being carried. So with a writhing 3-year-old under one arm, screaming that she didn't want to go home at the top of her lungs, a bag of wet clothes slung over the other arm, and a trailing 4-year-old dragging wet towels behind me, we made our way back to the car. By the time we got home, the worst was over. Lunch, a good nap, and a snuggle soothed the rest of the hurt away. And later we talked about what happened and what we learned. Looking back, I see that day as a lesson for all 3 of us in the lifelong work of learning to deal with disappointment. Sometimes things just don't go how we'd like for them to go. We can't always have what we want. We have to stop swimming, leave the park, get ready for bed. The big game is canceled because of rain. We don't get invited to the birthday party. The tryouts for the lead in the class play happen when we're homesick. We fail the test we were sure we passed. The honor goes to someone else. We don't get the job. The love of our life breaks our hearts. We lose friends to distance, misunderstanding, and fear. The children make mistakes. We make mistakes. The test is negative when we wish it were positive. The test is positive when we wish it were negative. We get sick. We get hurt. We get lost. Inherent in life is the promise of loss. Whenever we give ourselves to hope or love or dreams, we risk losing. Indeed, the greater our love, the bigger our dreams, the deeper our hope, the more we stand to lose if things do not go as we would have them. But there is no life without love or hope or dreams, and so we must risk. We must risk for that which matters, all the while knowing that we might lose. And knowing, too, that when we lose big, it hurts. In a way, surviving deep disappointments is kind of like surviving little deaths. The poet speaks of this when he writes, "More and more you have become those lives and deaths that have belonged to you. You have become a sort of grave, containing much that was and is no longer, beloved then, now, and always." But loss and disappointment is not the end of the story. For in learning to die into life, we stand to find life anew. "And you have become a sort of tree standing over a grave," the poet continues. "Now more than ever, you can be generous toward each day that comes. Every day you have less reason not to give yourself away." The poem is woven with paradox. Inherent in life is the promise of loss. Inherent in birth is the promise of death. Inherent in love is the promise of life. See, sometimes we just can't have what we want. Sometimes disappointment pierces us through and brings us to our knees. Sometimes we lose big. But if we can learn to develop the strength of spirit to really live into our losses, the courage to let our hearts be broken open, we will find that we have an even greater capacity for love. And if we live by anything, we live by love. The eminent liberal theologian of the 20th century, James Luther Adams, said that church is a place where you get to practice what it means to be human. If you're willing, this church is a place where you can practice trusting other people with your losses. You can practice letting others keep you company when you're so disappointed you lose your way and even your hope. You can practice companioning another, and you can practice taking risks for the things that matter most. You can practice staying in relationship when you're disappointed by a person in this community or by this community as a whole. If you stick around, it happens. No person is perfect. No community is perfect. But together, we are wiser than we are alone. Together, we are stronger than we are alone. You can give me courage when mine fails. I can give you my hand when sorrow takes your breath away. We can cry if we need to. We can say a prayer if it might help. And then together we can practice breathing. Breathing in, we breathe in peace. Breathing out, we breathe out love. This is how it goes on. This is how we go on. May it be so. And amen. Will the ushers please come forward? Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Your generosity will now be gratefully received. Have gathered dedicated to the proposition that underneath all our diversity, there lies a unity which binds us one to another, to the earth, and to the spaces between the stars. We have gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Go in peace.